Transcending Politics, a Techno-Progressive Roadmap to a Comprehensively Better Future. Written by David W. Wood. Read for you by the author. Politics is broken. Technology risks making matters worse. But transhumanism can fix it. Comprehensively. Chapter 1. Vision and Roadmap. There's no escape. The journey to a healthier society inevitably involves politics. That's a message many technologists and entrepreneurs are unwilling to hear. They would prefer to ignore politics. They wish, instead, to keep their focus on creating remarkable new technology or on building vibrant new business. Politics is messy and ugly, they say. It's raucous and uncouth. It's unproductive. Some would even say that politics is unnecessary. But putting our heads in the sand about politics is a gamble fraught with danger. Looking the other way won't prevent our necks from being snapped when the axe falls. As eruptions from broken politics grow more intense, they will afflict everyone, everywhere. On their present trajectory, technology and business are actually making politics worse rather than better. Together, without intending it, they are fueling increasing dysfunction within politics. In such a setting, technological innovations and aggressive business corporations might end up harming humanity much more than they help us. You'll find many examples in the pages ahead of how flawed politics leads to a string of bad outcomes. You'll hear about perverse economic incentives, regulatory institutions that are caught in lethargy and inertia, vested interests that hold disproportionate power, self-perpetuating industrial complexes, spiraling arms races, and much more. These outcomes, exacerbated by almighty technology put to sinister use, are likely to lead in turn to a hurricane of adverse consequences, to an epic disaster of social disintegration and humanitarian tragedy. Indeed, fixing politics is the central challenge of our time, and hence the central theme of this book. If we can fix politics, if we can transcend its messiness and ugliness to enable its true purpose, we can facilitate profound positive progress in many other areas of life. But if politics remains broken, it could lead us to collective ruin. Section: The Necessity of Politics. There's no intrinsic reason for politics to be messy or ugly, raucous or uncouth, nor should it be seen as some kind of unnecessary activity. Politics arises wherever people gather together. Whenever we collectively decide the constraints we put on each other's freedoms, we're taking part in politics. Consider some examples where constraints on freedom are needed. Someone in the throes of a midlife crisis wants the freedom to drive his car along public roads at high speed, even though it's been years since any mechanic has checked the roadworthiness of the vehicle, and the driver has recently been imbibing some experimental new drugs. A factory owner wants the freedom to dump the raw effluent of her factory into the local wildlife lake, rather than spending lots of money to sanitize the waste before disposing of it. A young married couple want the freedom to select the sex of their firstborn child to ensure they start their family with a son rather than a daughter. A colonel wants the freedom to modernize the Army's airborne missile defense system so that engagement decisions can be taken by software without slowing down the process by requiring human review. Consider further. A mother has read on the internet that vaccinations may have side effects and wants the freedom to absent her daughter from the local vaccination program. An academic has discovered a tweak to the smallpox virus that makes it more deadly than the original and wants the freedom to publish his research openly on the internet. An industrialist wants the freedom to use new drilling technologies deep underground to extract oil and gas that have previously been inaccessible, whilst discounting fears that these new techniques might trigger earthquakes. An entrepreneur wants the freedom to shower particles high in the atmosphere to counter the effects of rising global temperatures, even though some critics worry about massive unintended side effects. In each of these cases, the rest of us probably feel uneasy. We want to say that freedom needs to operate within limits. But how are these limits agreed? How are they enforced? And, especially important in a time of accelerating change, how are alterations introduced when the assumptions underpinning a set of limits no longer pertains? Welcome to politics. Of course, the subject of politics extends beyond constraints, the limits to freedom. Politics also covers incentives, the encouragements we apply to each other to take action we believe will be in our collective good interest. Politics provides carrots as well as sticks. Road tax may be reduced if a car uses a greener form of energy. Financial assistance may be provided for companies providing various sorts of apprentice training. Governments may top up pension contributions. Some jurisdictions provide monetary incentives to couples with certain demographic features to have children. Public funding may encourage companies to set up factories in deprived areas. Prizes can be offered to stimulate ideas in areas lacking attention. The same questions arise as before. How are these incentives agreed, operated, and updated? Ideally, political decision processes will draw on the best insights of the entire community. Ideally, society's regulatory and legal frameworks, which constrain how we all operate, will serve society as a whole rather than narrow cliques. Where there are conflicts of interests, these should be addressed and resolved rationally rather than by brute power or hidden skullduggery. In today's fast-changing world, the legal frameworks that stipulate which activities are restricted and which are, instead, encouraged, need updating more and more quickly. As new technological possibilities arise, laws and standards that made good sense in previous times no longer make such good sense. As technological innovation becomes more pervasive, legal reform needs to accelerate. In some cases, frameworks need loosening, in others, tightening. In yet others, whole new concepts are required. But how will these changes be agreed and overseen? And how can we prevent powerful vested interests from defining and manipulating these regulatory and legal frameworks for their own narrow benefits? These are key tasks for 21st century politics. The bad news is that politics is failing at this task, due in part to incompetence and in part to malice. Misconceived actions by out-of-touch politicians threaten to derail necessary reforms in these frameworks. Obstructive actions by self-serving politicians further hinder the reform process. The sorry result will be to stunt or even strangle important positive humanitarian initiatives. Initiatives in multiple fields of life, involving engineers, scientists, entrepreneurs, futurists, community builders, and other social reformers. Not for the first time in history, what is mediocre about humanity will obstruct what is potentially best about humanity. That's only the start of what's wrong with contemporary politics. It's not just that bad politics can impede vital civil improvement projects. Equally worrying, political machinations can distract society's attention, sideline critical resources, provoke divisions rather than unity, inflame the disaffected into acts of gross sabotage, and, in the worst case, plunge nations into cataclysmic war with each other. In short, we ignore politics at our peril. We need to take our heads out of the sand. Fast. Nevertheless, I write this book not to condemn politics, but to commend it. Politics, done well, can be a powerful ally in the quest to elevate humanity to our true potential. The good news is that a better politics awaits us, beckoning us forward. It's up to us, all of us, whether we recognize that call and take the required actions. Key to these actions will be to harness technology more wisely and more profoundly than before. By the phrase better politics, I'm thinking not just of individual politicians becoming more responsive and more knowledgeable, welcome though such a development will be, nor is my vision limited to the advent of new, future-savvy political parties, something, again, that is long overdue. Critically, what I have in mind is the emergence of a reinvigorated political system, a 21st century arena which, aided by 21st century technology, facilitates political debate that is better informed, more engaged, more productive, and genuinely beneficial. This improved new mode of conduct will transcend the short-sightedness, self-justifications, and other deep-seated obstructions that so widely bedevil present-day political interactions. In this envisioned possible new politics of the near future, decisions can take place informed by the best insight of the population as a whole, rather than being subverted by partisan vested interests. Viewpoints and information that deserve more attention will rise to the top of political discussion, untarnished, rather than being pushed aside or deviously distorted by those who find them inconvenient. Political discourse will become authentic rather than contrived. Our politics will become animated by the spirit of constructive curiosity and open collaboration. Evidently, that's a far cry from the present situation. Our politics has grown dysfunctional in recent times, frustratingly, dangerously dysfunctional. The underlying reason for this dysfunction is because our mainstream mental worldviews and cultural frameworks are unable to handle the accelerating pace of change. To cope with this intense 21st century pace, we sorely need new worldviews and new frameworks. We are overdue for a decisive move beyond formerly dominant thought patterns such as economic neoliberalism, market-led capitalism, worker-led socialism, nation-state conservatism, technological determinism, and backward-looking, natural-is-best eco-primitivism. We urgently need a 21st century paradigm that can supersede and transcend these ailing predecessors. Section: The Necessity of Transhumanism. In response to our current conceptual crisis, I offer transhumanism. Just as I believe that the journey to a healthier society inevitably involves politics, I also believe that journey inevitably involves transhumanism. That's a message many observers may be unwilling to hear, but it's a message that deserves attention. To persevere with outdated mental and cultural frameworks, without absorbing the full transformational insights and energy of transhumanism, is, again, to risk social disintegration and humanitarian tragedy. If you're unsure about transhumanism, if the word disturbs you, or you've heard weird things about apparently naive transhumanists, I ask you to put these critical thoughts temporarily on hold. Hopefully you'll find in the pages ahead a description that makes more sense than you expected. The essence of transhumanism is captured in this succinct definition by Swedish polymath Anders Sandberg. Quote, "Transhumanism is the philosophy that we can and should develop to higher levels, physically, mentally, and socially, using rational methods." End quote. And here's a formulation from 1990 by the founder of the modern transhumanist movement, philosopher Max Moore. Quote, "Transhumanism is a class of philosophies of life that seek the continuation and acceleration of the evolution of intelligent life beyond its currently human form and human limitation by means of science and technology, guided by life-promoting principles and values. End quote. Throughout this book, I'll be highlighting the special relevance of transhumanism to the project of enhancing politics. Don't worry, I won't be presuming any prior knowledge of transhumanism. However, if you're interested, you can read many of the movement's foundational articles in the collection The Transhumanist Reader. Another good starting point to explore the overall concept is in the online H+pedia wiki. For now, I'll extend Sandberg's definition as follows. Transhumanism asserts that humanity can and should take wise and profound advantage of technology to transcend the damaging limitations and drawbacks imposed by the current circumstances of human nature. As a result, humans will be able to transition, individually and collectively, towards a significantly higher stage of life, a life with much improved quality. As in the short video, An Introduction to Transhumanism, which with approaching 250,000 views is probably the most widely watched video on the subject, transhumanism is sometimes expressed in terms of the so-called three supers. Super longevity, significantly improved physical health, including much longer lifespans, overcoming human tendencies towards physical decay and decrepitude. Superintelligence, significantly improved thinking capability, overcoming human tendencies towards mental blind spots and collective stupidity. And super well-being, significantly improved states of consciousness, overcoming human tendencies towards depression, alienation, vicious emotions, and needless suffering. My advocacy of transhumanism actually emphasizes one variant within the overall set of transhumanist philosophies. This is the variant of transhumanism known as techno-progressive transhumanism. The techno-progressive variant of transhumanism, in effect, adds one more super to the three already mentioned. Super-democracy, significantly improved social inclusion and resilience whilst upholding diversity and liberty, overcoming human tendencies towards tribalism, divisiveness, deception, and the abuse of power. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Before saying more about techno-progressive ideas, there's some additional context I need to set. The following remarks about power and technology should help make clear the deep inadequacies of existing mainstream political thinking. Section: Power and Corruption. Power tends to corrupt, warned Lord Acton, the 19th century historian and politician. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Power can corrupt the clarity of our thinking and our sense of moral duty. It can lead us to forget our social binds to our fellow citizens. It can cause us to think of ourselves as much more worthy and deserving than our former kith and kin. We might gain the whole world, but lose our soul. What is worrying is that never before have we humans held so much power in our hands. Science and technology have provided us with spectacular capabilities. We can redirect mighty rivers, hasten the formation of storm clouds, cool down the earth by blotting out sunlight using aerosols, and through hydraulic fracturing, trigger massive earthquakes. We may soon recreate in the midst of our countrysides the same sustained nuclear fusion as takes place deep inside stars. We can cut and splice genetic solutions from one species into others that are far distant on the tree of life. And, grown emboldened from re-engineering nature, we are now poised to re-engineer human nature. Whether these near-absolute powers will corrupt humanity, ruinously, or instead uplift humanity, gloriously, remains an open question. Given the pace at which breakthrough change hurtles around the world, frequently with cascading unintended consequences, it's also an urgent question. We might not like to be reminded of this, but our increasingly powerful superhuman capabilities coexist precariously with ugly subhuman proclivities carried forward from prehistoric times. This potent, deadly combination may be on the point of veering completely out of control. Eminent biologist Edward O. Wilson has put it well. Quote, "The real problem of humanity is the following. We have Paleolithic emotions, medieval institutions, and godlike technology. And it is terrifically dangerous and is now approaching a point of crisis overall." End quote. Ages-old primal human traits, such as vanity, envy, self-righteousness, tribalism, and alienation, are being aggravated by the blistering pace of modern-day social change. These traits are being fanned by divisive ideologies of retrenchment and separation. They're being magnified by all sorts of accelerating technological breakthroughs and societal dislocation. With their newfound unprecedented vigour, these traits are poised to wreak existential havoc. All that we hold dear could perish. That forecast may seem melodramatic. But observe that, as humanity becomes smarter, it's far from clear that we're also becoming wiser. Greater strength doesn't automatically bring greater kindness. More intelligence can make us more narrow-minded rather than more thoughtful. It gives us a terrifying capability to discover or invent new reasons to justify us doing whatever it is that we've already decided we want to do. Sadly, we often choose to harness our intelligence to bolster our biases and reinforce our prejudices. Lacking a compelling, bigger vision, people wrap themselves in small-minded cleverness. Without a better understanding of the layout of the landscape ahead, without a trustworthy vision of how technology can best serve human needs, we risk unwittingly stumbling our way into some kind of Armageddon. Through blinkered haste and collective naivety, we could trigger hideous 21st century equivalents of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. Each of us is already under frequent hostile attack, if not from apocalyptic equestrians, then from multiple commercial and political forces that seek to exploit us, manipulate us, or diminish us. We are the victims of ingenious pressures that operate on our minds as well as on our bodies. Weapons, if you like, that warp not only our physical infrastructure, but also our cultural fabric and our perceptual frameworks. It is no wonder that so many people perceive they are losing control of their lives. Escalating competitive arms races mean that these pressures are more likely to intensify than to diminish. These pressures cannot be turned off, but they can be steered. The first task in steering is to establish the appropriate direction. That direction cannot simply be more technology, more trade, or more wealth. I'll argue in this book that the vision should be more humanity, an increase in human flourishing, with a strong emphasis on quality rather than quantity. I'll also argue that technology, wisely guided, has an enormous positive role to play in the fulfillment of this vision. Indeed, technology has a huge potential to elevate and improve the operation of politics. It can enable us to transcend the blockages and myopia of present-day politics. In short, technology can fix politics and open the way to a comprehensively better future, but only if we learn to handle it properly. Section: Floods Ahead. It's time to talk frankly about technology. Technology is eating the world at an accelerating pace. Technology is changing everything, but not necessarily for the better. We've been embracing new powers with insufficient foresight. Like the animated broom in Goethe's fable of the Sorcerer's Apprentice, technology initially promises so much, but has the potential to unleash floods of damage. Consider the disruptions that are already in progress. Ubiquitous surveillance, always-on 24/7 internet connectivity, carefully targeted, individualized messaging that knows how to catch each of us at our weakest, hardware and software robots that transform the workplace and threaten human redundancy, pills that profoundly modify personal mood, therapies and implants that radically alter the health of body, brain, mind, and spirit, vast virtual worlds that entice us to become immersed in alternative realities, pervasive new infrastructures that are vulnerable to large-scale hacking and distortion as never before, engineering capabilities at both the genetic and planetary scale, which have the potential, if they go wrong, to devastate our shared ecosystem, new tools and weapons that put unparalleled power in the hands of terrorists, criminals, demagogues, and tyrants, all kinds of arms races intensifying as competing interests frantically seek to keep one step ahead of their perceived foes. As all these changes take place at an intensified pace, converging with and impacting each other, present-day problems and concerns will soon fade into comparative insignificance. They'll be surpassed by much larger issues, vast new opportunities, and monstrous new threats. Sensing these impending changes, sometimes dimly, sometimes more clearly, voters around the world are rebelling from conventional wisdom. Our social and political landscapes, with their long familiar mix of tensions and conflicts, are morphing before our eyes into surprising new configurations. These new configurations are riven with fault lines of their own, and are likely to spiral and splinter into yet stranger alliances. In short, we can expect the future of politics to be increasingly turbulent. Technology is already a highly significant influence on our social being, both for good and for ill. That influence is getting stronger all the time. Without wise guidance, technological excesses threaten to multiply environmental destruction, social division, personal alienation, and political chaos. We need to take charge of technological change before technological change takes charge of us. More precisely, we need to step up before various hotheads or ideologues or naives, whether with malign motivations or misguided intentions, take charge of technology and use it, wittingly or unwittingly, to plunge society into a new dark age. We also need to ensure that no one manages to throw a big off switch for technological progress, effectively sabotaging all the vitally useful development that's underway. For all these reasons, it's critically important to fix the problems that beset politics. If we cannot discuss big issues rationally, we should not be surprised if irrational choices transpire. If our politics remains broken, there's little hope for humanity. Section: Steering Technology. The future of politics is intimately tied up with the future of technology. We cannot hope to free politics from the destructive pressures it faces, the drowning of collective reason by collective rancor, and the industrial-scale manipulation of the public mood by nefarious behind-the-scenes forces, without highlighting, understanding, and actively directing the huge transformational potential of technology. We have to focus attention on that huge transformational potential and show how technology can be used to dramatically improve politics rather than continuing to degrade politics. Fixing politics will become much easier once a compelling, integrative vision of a sustainable transhumanist future has become widespread. A convincing account of how technology can be harnessed for profound positive progress. An energizing account that inspires coordinated action in support of that future. This book sets out such a vision. I call it the Transpolitica vision. The vision is transhumanist. It envisions all humans having the freedom to experience greater health, greater wisdom, and greater well-being than has been possible in history so far. We will be free as never before. The vision is techno-progressive. It involves humanity actively and collectively steering the progress of technology so that society can take deep advantage of the resulting innovations, so that society will be able to progress to a radically better configuration for the clear benefit of everyone, with no one left behind. The vision is sustainable. They envision future lifestyles won't drain or waste resources. Human society will be poised to grow and evolve far into the future in ongoing harmony with the natural environment. The vision is integrative. It will be able to accept and acknowledge diverse points of view, allowing people to collaborate deeply despite having conflicting backgrounds and different temperaments. But such a vision, by itself, will be insufficient to transform politics. Something else is needed, namely a credible roadmap by which society can move, step by step, from its present troubled status toward the envisioned, sustainable, positive future. That roadmap needs to acknowledge the very serious risks and obstacles that lie en route to the envisioned better future. Vested interests, institutional inertia, short-term thinking, power dynamics, obstructive media, debilitating fears, dysfunctional political structures, and much more. Crucially, the roadmap also needs to indicate solutions to these risks and obstacles. You can find my suggestions for these solutions in the chapters that follow. These chapters spell out the Transpolitica roadmap alongside the Transpolitica vision. The roadmap encompasses progress in multiple different fields of technology. The next generation green tech, which can provide an abundance of clean energy from the likes of sun, wind, wave, and geothermal. The nature-enhancing synthetic biotech, which can provide an abundance of healthy food and drink. The atomically precise nanotech, which can provide an abundance of all sorts of material goods, including low-cost 3D printed housing. The restorative and preventive rejuvenation tech, which can provide an abundance of affordable healthcare, with people able to become better than well, and even, if they choose, youthful again. The brain-boosting cognotech, which can provide an abundance of all-round intelligence, emotional, rational, social, spiritual, and more. The labour-saving automation tech, which can provide us with an abundance of time for creativity. The world-transforming geotech, which can address the needs of natural disasters such as tsunamis and supervolcanoes. The world-transcending space tech, which will allow us to explore and find purpose in the vast terrains of both outer and inner space. The resource-enhancing fintech, which can empower society to make best use of our collective energies without risk of economic chaos. The bridge-building collab tech, which can enable us to cooperate better in pursuit of our technological and social progress. And the sorely needed polytech, which will improve our political processes, leveraging elements of the other technologies listed above. It should go without saying that each of these fields of technology has the potential for radically bad outcomes, as well as the positive ones I've just listed. For example, modifications to the genomes of organisms could result in fast-spreading pathogens. Misapplications of geoengineering could plunge the planet into a new ice age, even as we seek to avoid global warming. Powerful new sources of energy, such as low-cost nuclear fission, could find their way into terrorist weaponry. And once we have put more of our human systems under the watchful eye of software supervision, these systems could become vulnerable in new ways to unexpected bugs in that software. It's because of these risks of technology going wrong that we must collectively seek to actively steer the progress of technology, rather than leaving its development in the hands of industrialists, entrepreneurs, scientists, and engineers. Much though we can admire the positive accomplishments of these groups of people, we should also be aware of examples when good intentions have led to dreadful outcomes. Think about the unexpected drawbacks arising from the use of asbestos in buildings, corn fructose syrup in numerous food, the insecticide DDT, leaded petrol, tobacco as a stress reducer, plastic bags for convenience, aerosols that cause the hole in the ozone layer, and much more. Now think about forthcoming similar problems that could have 100 times the impact and take effect 100 times more speedily. For that reason, the Transpolitica vision is techno-progressive more than it is techno-libertarian. I admire and champion liberty, but argue that we have to impose important constraints on our collective freedom in order to secure a future state where freedom flourishes more fully. Greater liberty arises as a consequence of wise social coordination, rather than existing primarily as a reaction against such coordination. Selecting and enforcing social constraints is the proper task of politics. Anyone interested in the transformative potential of technology will naturally be apprehensive about possible adverse impacts of collective constraints and incentives on new technologies. The wrong constraints will unnecessarily impede the development of much-needed innovative solutions. The wrong incentives will keep in place obsolete systems that have outgrown their previous usefulness. But to be clear, despite these potential drawbacks, I fully support the existence of well-chosen constraints and incentives. I'm no libertarian, apprehensive of all such social interventions. I see that social constraints and incentives have vital positive roles to play in helping to provide people with an environment in which they can flourish more fully. If we dislike the way politicians are intervening in the development of new technology, that's no reason to say, let's keep politicians out of this. Instead, it's a reason to ensure that we have a better quality of political involvement. Rather than saying there should be no regulations, we should say we need smarter regulations. Regulations that are more transparent, lighter weight, harder to game, and self-policing. We should also be designing systems whereby all players are naturally incentivized to follow the regulations rather than seeking to work around them. Critics might respond that politicians are, somehow, inherently prone to becoming bad regulators. Politicians will inevitably be tempted toward empire building. Given their all-too-human personal frailties, they'll pursue white elephant vanity projects to glorify their own names. Lacking appropriate knowledge of technology or industry, they'll be vulnerable to being misled by vested interests. Any hope on my part for better politicians and for better politics is misguided, a libertarian might assert. But in this book, I will argue the contrary. Not only do we need better politicians and better politics, but there is a roadmap to achieve these outcomes. By taking judicious advantage of technology, we can improve both politicians and politics, step by step. Section: Roadmap Ingredients. The French philosopher Joseph de Maistre may have overstated matters when he wrote in 1811 that every nation gets the government it deserves. But there's more than a gist of truth in the saying. Politics is the result of the actions of many different kinds of people, including lots of people who would not think of themselves as politicians. If we dislike how politics operates, it's probably not just politicians who are at fault. Fixing politics involves more than seeking to change the behaviour of individual politicians. Likewise, the regulations under which technology is steered, sometimes encouraged, sometimes restricted, sometimes for better, sometimes for worse, arise from the contribution of people in many different roles. As well as the elected politicians, who come to power on receiving the support of voters, there are many civil servants and other public officials who tend to remain in their roles even when there is a change of ruling party. Some of these public officials primarily administer regulatory policies assigned to them by elected politicians. Others act as advisers who can recommend changes in regulations for consideration by elected politicians. Ideas about changes in regulations arise from external consultants, academics, think tanks, the politicians themselves, and others. Ideas about changes in regulations receive support or criticism from journalists and other public analysts. Many of these external influences on politicians are driven by financial interests or other power considerations. This can lead them to distort, knowingly or unknowingly, the information they present to politicians, or to offer bribes for favourable decisions. The frameworks under which politicians of all sort operate are defended or challenged from time to time by lawyers and judges. And whether or not politicians proceed with particular policy ideas often depends on the feedback they receive from the electorate as a whole and from loud voices within the electorate. Indeed, the same voices will influence whether these politicians resolve to continue working in the political field or instead quit politics to transfer their focus to other kinds of activities. The Transpolitica Roadmap for Better Politics involves, accordingly, the following ingredients. Transparency systems, so that the deliberations of decision makers are visible and can be judged more easily and accurately. Fact-checking systems, to determine more quickly and clearly, via an online lookup, if some information is misleading, deceptive, biased, or in any other way suspect or substandard. Thinking training systems, to help everyone understand and routinely practice the skills of critical thinking, hypothesis formulation and testing, and independent evaluation of sources. Accountability systems, to hold people and organisations to account whenever they pass on damaging misinformation, similar to how codes of conduct already operate in the fields of advertising and investment communications. Bridging systems, to encourage people with strong disagreements to nevertheless explore and appreciate each other's point of view, so that shared values can be identified and a constructive dialogue established. Educational systems, to keep politicians of all sorts informed, succinctly yet reliably, in timely fashion, about the trends that could require changes in regulations. Simulation systems, to help politicians of all sorts creatively explore possible new policy frameworks and to gain a better idea in advance of likely positive and negative consequences of these new ideas. Monitoring systems, to report objectively on whether regulatory policies are having their desired effect. Concentration systems, to boost the ability of individual politicians to concentrate on key decisions and to reach decisions free from adverse tiredness, distraction, bias, or prejudice. And encouragement systems, to encourage greater positive participation in the political and regulatory processes by people who have a lot to contribute but who are currently feeling pressure to participate instead in different fields of activity. Key to many of these ingredients will be the smart design, development, and deployment of new technological systems. Collectively, these systems can be called polytech. As mentioned previously, polytech can take advantage of improvements in fields such as cognotech and collabtech. But I expect that two further considerations are already forming in readers' minds. One, would a focus on technological solutions blind us to important non-technological factors influencing politics? And two, what's going to prevent the misuse of these new technologies by politicians who are self-serving or narrow-minded, or by powerful corporations who want to pull the strings of politicians? Here are my answers to these questions. 1. Indeed, we do need to keep human factors high in our minds, rather than just the technological possibilities. I'll return to the question of motivations and incentives in the next chapter. And 2. Agreed, the maxim that all technologies can be applied for destructive purposes as well as constructive ones applies for polytech as much as in any other field. We're all going to need to keep our eyes wide open. The price of liberty is vigilance. You'll find plenty on that topic in the chapters ahead too. Section: Transcending Left and Right. The Transpolitica vision of transcending politics does not foresee the abolition or eradication of politics. There's nothing intrinsically undesirable about the central purpose of politics, the process whereby collective decisions are taken on the constraints we put on each other's freedom. What is undesirable, however, is a great deal of the practice of current politics, Transpolitica aims to leave that bad practice behind, thereby raising the quality of the decisions taken and overseen by politics. One of the most destructive elements of current politics is its divisiveness. Politicians form into warring parties, which then frequently find fault with each other. They seek to damage the reputation of their adversaries, throwing lots of mud in the hope that at least some of it will stick. Whereas disagreement is inherent in political process, what would be far better is if politicians could disagree without being disagreeable. The division between left and right is particularly long established. The pioneering transhumanist philosopher, F.M. Esfandieri, who later changed his name to F.M. 2030, lamented this division in his 1977 book, Upwingers. Quote, "To transcend more rapidly to higher levels of evolution, we must begin by breaking out of the confinement of traditional ideologies. We are at all times slowed down by the narrowness of right-wing and left-wing alternatives. If you are not conservative, you are liberal. If you are not right of centre, you are left of it or middle of the road. Our traditions comprise no other alternatives. There is no ideological or conceptual dimension beyond conservative and liberal, beyond right and left. Right and left, even the extreme left, are traditional frameworks predicated on traditional premises, striving in obsolete ways to attain obsolete goals." End quote. Esfandieri's answer was a different dimension, up. The optimistic embrace of radical technological possibility for positive human transformation. Quote, "How do you identify space scientists who this very day are working with new sets of premises to establish communities in other worlds? Are they right-wing or left? Are they conservative or liberal? How do you categorize radio astronomers now scanning the galaxies in search of intelligent life? Or scientists working on the implantation of devices in the human body, enabling the individual to control its own pain and pleasures, emotions and dreams? Or those working on telefarming systems which can provide endless quantities of food? Or computers developing cybernated systems to free people of the primitive ordeals of perpetual work and of leadership government? Or bioengineers striving to conquer death? These and other breakthroughs are outside the range of all the traditional philosophical, social, economic, political frameworks. These new dimensions are nowhere on the right or on the left. These new dimensions are up. Up is an entirely new framework whose very premises and goals transcend the conventional right and left. The right-left establishment wants to maintain an evolutionary status quo. It is resigned to humanity's basic predicament. It simply strives to make life better within this predicament. Upwingers are resigned to nothing. We accept no human predicament as permanent, no tragedy as irreversible, no goals as unattainable." End quote. The term up dovetails with Esfandieri's evident interest in the exploration of space. We should raise our thinking upwards, towards the stars, rather than being constrained with small-mindedness. Professor Steve Fuller of the University of Warwick and legal expert Veronica Lipinska take these ideas further in their 2014 book, The Proactionary Imperative, A Foundation for Transhumanism, in which they explore the rotation of the ideological axis from left-right to up-down. Fuller and Lipinska provide some fascinating historical background and provocative speculations about possible futures, including a section on the four styles of playing God in today's world. I share the view that there are more important questions than the left-right split that has dominated politics for so long. Esfandieri was correct to highlight the question of whether to embrace up or to reject down the potential of new technology to dramatically enhance human capabilities. But the up decision to embrace the potential for transhuman enhancements still leaves many other decisions unresolved. People who identify as being upwing are torn between being right-leaning upwingers and being left-leaning upwingers. The former admire the capabilities of a free market, the latter admire the safety net of a welfare system. The former mistrust the potential overreach of politicians, the latter mistrust the actions of profit-seeking corporations. The former wish to uphold as much individual freedom as possible, the latter wish to uphold as much social solidarity as possible. The former are keen to reduce taxation, the latter are keen to increase equality of opportunity. The former point to the marvels that can be achieved by competitive-minded self-made individuals, and the latter point to the marvels that can be achieved by collaboration-minded progressive coalitions. I've already identified myself as a techno-progressive more than a techno-libertarian. Individual freedoms are important, but the best way to ensure these is via wise collective agreement on appropriate constraints. Rather than seeking minimal government and minimal taxation, you'll see in the pages ahead that I argue for appropriate government and appropriate taxation. However, I'm emphatically not going to advocate that left-leaning transhumanists should somehow overcome or defeat right-leaning transhumanists. The beliefs I listed as being characteristic of right-leaning transhumanists all contain significant truths, as do the beliefs I listed for left-leaning transhumanists. The task ahead is to pursue policies that respect both sets of insights. That's what I mean when describing the Transpolitica initiative as integrative. Rather than either or, it's both and. Section: Technocracy and its limits. There's a long history to the idea that political decisions should be taken not on the basis of ideology, such as left-wing or right-wing, nor on the basis of party loyalty, but on the basis of independent rational thinking, empirical evidence, and scientific methods. The Greek philosopher Plato argued against using principles of democracy to decide the direction of government. He saw this as analogous to deciding how a boat should be steered through choppy seas and low-lying rocks. That's not the kind of decision you leave up to a vote between passengers, some saying raise the sails, some saying lower the sails, some urging turning port, others demanding starboard. It's far better to employ a trusted expert for the role, especially someone who would be impervious to bribes and threats. Under the heading technocracy, similar ideas were promoted in the United States and Canada in the 1930s, by a movement that still exists today. Here's an extract from the website of Technocracy Inc. Quote, "Technocracy wants the people who are designated excellent in their fields, by their direct peers, to make the vital societal decisions. Do we want a farmer telling the doctors how to do their business? Do we want a production manager to tell the farmers what is the best crop for their land? Do we want profit-driven politics to make our decisions on anything? Technocracy has always wanted the experts to make decisions." End quote. More recently, Michigan physician Peter Ubel has promoted the idea of Scientocracy, which he describes as a government of the people but informed by scientists. Quote, "The key to good policy making is to understand human nature. Want to increase how much money people save? You'd better know what they will do if you change the tax code. Want to reduce the threat of terrorism? All the security in the world won't suffice if you don't, at the same time, find ways to confront the behavioural forces that lead people to commit acts of terror. Want to make healthcare affordable to all? Policy won't achieve this goal unless policymakers understand the ways doctors and patients make decisions about what healthcare services to use. In my new blog, Scientocracy, I plan to explore important policy debates through the lens of human behaviour. I intend to not only show why psychological science is relevant to a whole range of policy debates, but also to imagine what policies might look like if they were better aligned with human nature." End quote. Ubel provides this clarification. Quote, "When I talk about Scientocracy, I'm not talking about a world ruled by behavioral scientists or any other kind of scientists. Instead, I am imagining a government of the people, but informed by scientists. A world where people don't argue endlessly about whether educational vouchers will improve schools, whether gun control will reduce crime, or whether health saving accounts can lower healthcare expenditures, but one instead where science has a chance to show us whether vouchers, gun control laws, and health saving accounts work, and if so, under what conditions." End quote. Political decision making via the scientific process? What could go wrong with that? And what's the problem with putting politics into the hands of experts in economics, financial systems, psychology, and so on? Nowadays, the term technocrat is often applied as a kind of insult. The implication is that someone may well have elite qualifications, but that's not enough to provide authority over the affairs of state. Specifically, here are concerns over rule by technocrats and scientocrats. Experts often get things wrong. Communities of experts often reinforce each other's views as a herd mentality. This observation lies behind the infamous remark by UK Conservative politician Michael Gove, "People in this country have had enough of experts," referring dismissively in the run-up to the Brexit referendum to professional economics forecasters. In other cases, different groups of experts reach diametrically opposed answers. Distinguished Nobel Prize-winning economists prescribe starkly different policies from each other. Particular scientific principles that have a good track record in one field of science may be less applicable in a different field of science. For example, requiring a repetition of double-blind tests. It's by no means always agreed what it means to apply scientific method. Citizens dislike having policies imposed on them by apparent elites without their involvement or discussion. A focus on phenomena that are measurable, such as the GDP metric of economic performance, may result in less attention paid to other phenomena that are ultimately more important. Although science can in principle explain the best way to achieve a particular outcome, it cannot by itself tell us whether that outcome is worth achieving. And scientists and other experts are by no means immune from distorting their theories and their evidence in order to match the inclination of their political masters. Thus, to gain favour with Joseph Stalin, Soviet biologist Trofim Lysenko championed anti-Darwinian socialist genetics theories of inheritance for agricultural products. The resulting famines caused millions to die from starvation. The technocratic movement ran into public ridicule in the United States in the 1930s, when it became clear that the movement's spokesperson, Howard Scott, lacked the academic credentials which he had claimed, and was by no means the distinguished engineer he had portrayed himself as being. What's more, independent analysts found many problems with the movement's proposal to replace the free market price system, including the dollar, with a new set of calculations based on the energy required to create goods. Despite these issues, I stick with the proposal that, as far as possible, methods of rationality, empirical observation, scientific analysis, and expert review should be applied to political decisions. To that extent, I see the ideals of technocracy, with a lowercase t, as one of the pillars of techno-progressive thought. But I say this with two caveats. Rationality, empirical observations, scientific analysis and expert review are often harder than people expect. We definitely should not trust the first few self-proclaimed experts who offer their opinion as to whether something is indeed rational, empirically grounded, and or scientific. And technocracy is only one of four pillars. Section: The four techno-progressive pillars. As this chapter has progressed, I've gradually introduced the notion of techno-progressive thinking. As a summary, I'll break down that thinking into four pillars. 1. Technocracy, the use, as far as possible, of principles of independent rationality and scientific analysis. 2. Transhumanism, the pillar that sets the direction for policy, namely the profound, ongoing elevation of all-round human health, human wisdom, human well-being, and human freedom. 3. Democracy, or better put, super-democracy, the active involvement of the entire population, both in decision-making and in the full benefits of transhumanism. I'll have a lot more to say about democracy in Chapter 10, Democracy and Inclusion. And 4, urgency, which might be expressed as exponential urgency. The accelerating pace of technological innovation threatens to hurl humanity, within just a few short years, into a bewildering no man's land between pitiful existential disaster and a magnificent sustainable abundance. We need to hasten our understanding of the possible trajectories ahead and equip ourselves to progress at full speed in the required direction. In case you're wondering, although the terms transhumanism and techno-progressive each go back several decades, the name Transpolitica is relatively new. I coined it in January 2015 as my recognition increased for the need for a new think tank dedicated to a different approach to politics. The Transpolitica manifesto has the following preamble. Quote, Transpolitica holds that human society should embrace, wisely, thoughtfully, and compassionately, the radical transformational potential of technology. The speed and direction of technological adoption can be strongly influenced by social and psychological factors, by legislation, by subsidies, and by the provision or restriction of public funding. Political action can impact all of these factors, either for better or for worse. Transpolitica wishes to engage with politicians of all parties to increase the likelihood of an attractive, equitable, sustainable, progressive futures. The policies we recommend are designed to elevate the thinking of politicians and other leaders away from being dominated by the raucous issues of the present to addressing the larger possibilities of the near future, and to draw attention to technological opportunities, map out attractive roads ahead, and address the obstacles which are preventing us from fulfilling our cosmic potential. End quote. I chose the name Transpolitica as a deliberate riff on the word transhumanism. Transhumanism anticipates tomorrow's humanity. It envisages the positive qualities and characteristics of future intelligent life. It takes steps towards achieving these qualities and characteristics, and it identifies and manages risks of negative characteristics of future intelligent life. Similarly, Transpolitica anticipates tomorrow's politics. It envisages the positive qualities and characteristics of future social structures. It takes steps towards achieving these qualities and characteristics, and it identifies and manages risks of negative characteristics of future social structures. 3 years after these foundational ideas appeared on the Transpolitica website, the need is stronger than ever for joined-up thinking to anticipate the better political practices of the future and to transcend the quagmire of current politics. Hence the book you now hold in your hands. The next step forward is a candid assessment of how bad things have become.